Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. It's 9 o'clock. We're at the Palm Coast Community Center for the regularly scheduled meeting of the Palm Coast City Council. Those of you who are able, would you please rise and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Mayor Nex.
Here.
Vice Mayor McGuire.
Here.
Councilmember
DiLorenzo.
Here. Councilmember
Nebbio. Here.
Councilmember Shipley.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is the approval of the August 4th City Council meeting and the August 11th City Council workshop. Are there any additions, corrections, or is there a motion for approval?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number two, resolution approving a final plat of Long Creek View replat. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is a simple little replat that Constance will give you the details on.
And Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry, Constance, this is quasi-judicial matter, so if there have been any ex parte communications, those need to be disclosed at this time.
Does anyone have any ex parte communications to disclose?
No. Nope.
No, sir.
I did speak to the attorney of record for about 30 seconds prior to this, but when no opinions were expressed, and my decision will be based solely on the record received today.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Excuse me.
Good morning, Mayor and council members.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning, Constance.
The plat is named Longs Creek View. It's a final plat, and it's also a replat. It's on the east side of Colchester Lane, south of Collison Court, and it's east of the College Waterway Canal. It also abuts the Long Creek Basin. The future land use is conservation and residential, and it is zoned residential. It is a 1.86 acre piece of land. It's currently three lots, and they are platting it into two lots. They are excessively large lots, and they exceed the minimum requirements for the single-family residential dimensional standards. Also, the wetland and upland buffer area is distinguished on the plat so that it remains undisturbed and undeveloped. And staff is recommending approval of the final plat for Longs Creek View replat.
Council questions.
Your Honor, Constance, what's an upland buffer?
It's the buffer between the wetland and the developable part of the property, the upland buffer. And it's an area where they cannot develop or disturb the land so that it remains natural.
Thank you.
Other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting from the public. Anything for the public wish to be heard on agenda item number two? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll go back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move approval of agenda item number two, a resolution approving final plat, Longs Creek View replat.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number three, a resolution approving a work order for Connect Consulting in the amount not to exceed $525,000 for hydrogeologic services for the Brackish Water Aquifer Performance Test, also known as an APT. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is all part of our long-range plan. In fact, our presentation today will address some of our long-range plans in our utility. The next two items after this are also related to our water supply source, and so this presentation will touch on the next two also. So we'll turn it over to Richard to get into the details.
Okay, good morning. As the first slide says, this is, while we're asking for approval to move forward with our aquifer performance test, it's really about long-range water supply planning. just mention that we're part of this process is to meet the council goals. And before we get started, we'll talk a little bit about capacity. The capacity can be defined in a number of different ways. We have distribution capacity. That's how much water that the water distribution system can deliver to its customers. Our permitted design capacity is how much water you're allowed to treat with your plants. That's a capacity that's permitted by the DEP. So how many gallons per day or per minute that your plants can put out. Your well field capacity is how much water your well field infrastructure can deliver. That's the pumps, the wells, the pipes that deliver water to the plant to be treated. And then we have our source water allocation. This is a permitted amount of water that you're allowed to withdraw from the ground as issued by the St. John's River Water Management District. And it's measured in million gallons per day on an annual average. Each year during a growth period, we update our water capacity analysis. And our current water capacity analysis speaks to all these various capacities, including water plant 1 and 3, our permitted design capacity, permitted by the DEP, is 9 million gallons per day. That's 51 wells supply those two plants, and they pump from the confined superficial aquifer. Our available well field capacity is currently 9.2 million gallons a day, but our consumptive use permit source water allocation that's issued by the Water Management District allows us to withdraw 6.875 million gallons per day on an annual average. Water treatment plant number 2 is permitted at 7.58 million gallons per day treatment capacity. It has 8 wells that supply it from the upper Florida aquifer, and that available well field capacity, the infrastructure limitation, is 2.5 million gallons per day. But our consumptive use permit allows us to withdraw up to 4.15 million gallons per day on an annual average. So our north well field capacity is 9.2 million gallons a day. Our south well field capacity, limited by its well field infrastructure, is 2.5 million gallons per day, or a combined capacity of 11.7 million gallons per day is our limiting factors. Just a map showing our various well fields. The confined superficial shown in the blue dots, and the existing south well field from the upper Florida shown in the red dots, and the yellow dots are our future wells. You can see water treatment plants are shown in kind of a light green color. There's 3 of them, and we're talking about our aquifer performance wells, which are the 2 little triangles in the northwest or the bottom left part of the map. Here's our projected flow demand and our available source water. Little busy chart, but it break it down for you. The bottom line, the black line that progressively gets from about looks like about 7.5 or 8 million gallons a day up, moving from left to right. That is our average daily flow. That's what we are currently averaging and our projections for the near future. The blue line is our max day. So we have to have water treatment capacity to meet that max day flow for any day that we have high demand. Then the green line is our current permit allocation. That's the amount that the Water Management District currently allows us to withdraw from the ground. And our total raw available is in red. And you can see that we have some well-fueled improvements that are going on as we speak or in the near future that will increase that total raw available. But obviously, there's some areas in the near future that we have to accommodate for some expansion. So our future potential water supply, of course, we have fresh groundwater. That's what we're using right now, and we will continue to use fresh groundwater going into the future. We have the confined surficial, which is used in the north two plants and the south zone upper Florida aquifers. And then we have alternative water supply potentials. First is brackish water. The north zone of the Florida aquifer is brackish. There's no fresh water in the Florida aquifer available to us in the north end of Palm Coast, so that water is brackish, and that's what we're going to talk about today. We have freshwater concentrate that's coming off of the membrane plants, the low pressure RO plants produce a concentrate. They concentrate the elements within fresh water into a kind of a waste stream that we have now tapped as a source with our zero liquid discharge plant that we built at Water Plant 2, and at Water Plant 3, the concentrate goes to Water Plant 1 where it can be further treated with lime softening. Considered an alternative source because it previously was discharged and now it's being reused. Of course, stormwater and reclaimed water for irrigation. And we have used stormwater for a long, long time for irrigation. And since the city acquired the utility, we got into the reclaim business, and we have virtually during dry weather periods all of the wastewater effluent, treated wastewater effluent coming from our plant is used for irrigation. And then reclaimed water for indirect freshwater aquifer recharge. That's taking reclaimed water, applying it to the ground near our well field where it's allowed to percolate back in the ground, gets treated by going through the soils, and ultimately recharges our aquifer. And, of course, ultimately the seawater, direct seawater reverse osmosis. So water supply availability. In order to get water out of the ground, we have to request an allocation for the water management district. To do that, it requires a complete impact analysis. That's a sophisticated computer simulation to show that if you have your if you propose withdrawals, that can predict whether there's any kind of impacts. Impacts being effects on groundwater, aquifers, or surface waters like wetlands. Fresh water, to get fresh water, we have to run the existing model. There's a model that was developed during the last consumptive use permit, and so we could run the existing model using the existing data to complete an impact analysis to see if we could get additional fresh water. The brackish groundwater, there's no data available to run a model, so we need to collect the data, hence the aquifer performance test that we're proposing. In order to do that complete impact analysis, we have to do these aquifer performance tests and collect the data to input into the model. And then the seawater is our long-range long-range water supply potential. And as you know, we did some preliminary work with Coquina Coast seawater plant in a joint effort with a lot of other utilities. At one time, there was up to 12 utilities in that group that were looking for a regional source or a regional solution to long-range water supply by direct seawater desal. So the time frames to determine the supply availability is to complete an impact analysis. Just to do the impact analysis, if we were to go for fresh groundwater using the existing model, it would take 2 years to do a complete impact analysis. The brackish groundwater will probably add another year to that impact analysis because that's not something that's been done in this area yet. And then seawater, at least 5 to 10 years. So if we were to implement a supply, that's the impact analysis, design, and construct the infrastructure, to get fresh groundwater is going to take 5 years. That's to get the allocation, all the funding, acquire the well sites, design the project, and construct the wells to the plants. And that, we estimate, it'll take 5 years. To go for brackish groundwater, we're estimating 7 years to complete the impact analysis and construct the facilities. And, of course, seawater, if we were to start today, we're saying 10 to 15 years before we could deliver drinking water. So our current projections, we show an average day system demand flow will exceed our permitted allocation by 2023. So back that up to the previous slide that said brackish water will take us 7 years. So we're looking at needing additional allocation by 2023. We're estimating our maximum day system demand flow will actually exceed our actual supply capacity by 2022. That's why we're already working on some infrastructure to get more supply. So we now need to reserve our permitted source water allocation capacity and wellfield capacity to allow for growth. Go through this process. We're looking in order to maintain a healthy well field, we have to have more supply available than what our demands are, because we have to rotate our wells, we have to shut them down for rehab, and as you know, we frequently are before you with projects to do well rehabs or well replacements. So we have to have enough wells to be able to rotate, rest, and repair existing wells. And we're estimating about 3 million gallons a day of extra capacity to do that. And to maintain water quality, we have to have enough wells to allow for rotational. Resting to maintain water quality, 10 wells at 0.3 million gallons a day each. So that's the 3 million gallons. And all of this well field capacity is planned for in the five-year CIP. So the funds are allocated in our CIP to do all of this work. So in our current five-year CIP in 2015, we want to complete the APT towards developing an alternative water supply. That's kind of – that obviously will carry over into next fiscal year. But we're looking at late 2015, which is where we are now, into early 2016, this $550,000 for the aquifer performance test. It just so happens that the Water Management District is going to help us out with that. We've obtained a commitment for a 33% cost share from the Water Management District, or they will contribute $164,000 towards our project. Then in 2015 to 2017, we have various well field expansion projects to the tune of about $3.3 million. That's that part to increase the well field infrastructure to deliver more raw water to a plant that currently has capacity to treat. And then each year in our five-year CIP, we allow for about $250,000 a year just for R&R, for existing wells and repairs and replacements. So based on time frames, we recommend that we move forward with the APT to determine the availability of brackish water, and if it proves to be positive, then we can move forward with brackish water supply. Water treatment plant number 3 has the capability to be modified to treat brackish water. If we can't get additional brackish water supply, then we have to start working on some additional allocations from other sources. So our recommendation is to provide for this projected growth and move forward with the APT at this time.
Is that it?
Yes.
Council questions. Mr. McGuire.
Richard, the estimates of brackish water and groundwater, are those numbers pretty constant? I mean, how do you really know from 1 month to the next how much brackish water is available for processing?
Well, that is the key. We're not sure. That's why we need to do the APTs. The aquifer performance test actually drills wells, as well as a bunch of other monitoring wells, and then they pump the brackish aquifer, and they take all the measurements, gather the data to plug into the model to see what the predictable sustainability of that aquifer is. Well, we have a lot of information on the freshwater supply because we've been studying that since the 70s.
So your brackish water availability is an estimate?
Correct.
Okay. How much competition is there for this same water?
Zero to none in this area.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I just ask?
Yeah.
If the brackish water turned out to not be available to us, the next step would be the seawater and a desal plant?
Well, that wouldn't necessarily be the next step because there is potential for some additional freshwater supply as we expand our well field to the west. But we would need to get started on another alternative source because, as you saw in those forecasts, the time frame to obtain a different alternative source is pretty lengthy. So it's something that, yes, we would have to get started on fairly early.
Mr. DiLorenzo.
Thank you, Mayor. Your confidence in the brackish water supply being good? I mean, we have small time frames, as Ms. Shipley just mentioned.
I don't have any confidence level one way or the other because I'm not the hydrogeologist. I think our hydrogeologist is fairly confident that source water would be a viable source. But until you plug the data into the model, it's really difficult to tell.
Thank you.
The 2022 date, did that include the expansion of wells to supply, what was that, water treatment plant 2?
Correct.
And that would bring it to what capacity?
That'll add another million, so it'll take it up to 3.5.
That'll
be the well field.
Yeah, Brian's not speaking into the mic. But,
I'm sorry.
Add another million gallons per day capacity to water treatment plant number 2, our current expansion of the raw water.
And that's the one running at 2.5 now?
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
If you do the APT, it seems to me you will get some availability. You would probably not do an APT and show that there's zero availability. Or is that conjecture?
I think that the groundwater experts feel pretty certain that there would be some allocation available without having negative impacts.
Okay. Because we're spending $500,000.
Yes.
If we spend $500,000 and get zero availability, that's $500,000 less to go to whatever the next option is.
Yeah. And I can tell you, you know, back in the early 70s, ITT did a major exploratory program, which included wells where we currently are proposing our APTs. I mean, they went out in the boonies and drilled to see what was available. So there's been if you read the old comprehensive land use plan prepared by ITT, there's a whole big section on water. And even then, they were forecasting that we would use brackish as our alternative supply in the long range.
Other council questions? Okay. Seeing no one, open the meeting to the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on this agenda item? Come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Jack Carroll, Palm Coast. With the projected of population going, what is it, three times, four times by 2025, are we going to have enough water for all these people, even with the brackish, if the brackish is okay? That's a lot of water, it's a lot of people. And from what I don't know what they use, but what is it, 100 gallons a day or something like that? It's a lot of water.
That is true. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion. I mean, Richard, your projections for needed capacity incorporate the projected growth of the city. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
If we don't grow, then we don't need the water. If we grow faster, we're going to need the water sooner. you make the best guesstimates that you can make. One of the things that I like that this city has done, this council has done, and this utility has done is significant long-range planning. Could you describe what would happen if our demand exceeded our capacity? What would the impact be on our residents, on our businesses?
Well, of course, our job in the utility is to stay ahead of that growth and make sure that the capacity is available. If, for whatever reason, we weren't able to expand our capacity, then obviously we couldn't expand our facilities in the community. So basically, building moratoriums, people wouldn't be able to build houses on lots they already own. Businesses wouldn't be able to expand onto commercial properties. But
water rationing.
Water rationing, yeah, sure. Obviously, in the long run, we would do everything in our power to supply water. I think, and there will always be water available. It's the cost of water that will go up if you have to tap alternative sources like seawater.
That was a point you so aptly made when the Coquina Coast was around. There's always water. It's just the cost of using
right.
that water.
And for example, Tampa Bay, that used to use pretty much exclusively fresh water from wells, has had to go to alternative sources. They collect a lot of stormwater in large reservoirs, and they also have a 25-million-gallon-a-day desal plant. Obviously, when the demand is low, they shut down the desal plant because that's the most expensive water and use fresh water as much as they can. But as demand goes up, they crank up the other sources to provide for the demand.
And I think just for a historical perspective, even when the Coquina Coast Cooperative was functioning with these 12 utilities, it was never the anticipation that that would be the source of water. That would be the supplement to all
Correct.
Of the other less expensive sources of
Correct.
Water.
Correct.
Okay. Back to City Council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
I have a question, Your Honor. Richard, do any cities in Florida, to the best of your knowledge, ration water now?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
How far away are we as a state to, say, Southern California, which does have severe water restrictions?
Of course, some of that can be somewhat weather-dependent. If we were to enter into long-term drought situation, there's some of the freshwater wells could be impacted. I think the state of Florida has learned a lot from California experiences, and the water management districts are very aggressive at watching the available water supply and regulating that where is necessary. So hence the long-term impact analyses that we have to do to be able to withdraw water from the ground. They want to make assurances that those withdrawals are not going to have negative impacts. And so it takes us, 3 to 5 years to do those kinds of things because the water management district watches it so closely.
But your reference to Southern California is interesting because they are apparently heavily dependent on rainwater. They don't have any alternative water sources in terms of well drilling and that. So if it doesn't rain, they're in a drought situation.
Right. And they pull water, obviously, from long distances where Florida,
yeah.
There's lots of water here in Florida. It's just not so potable in a lot of areas.
Thank you.
Just to put this in perspective, a number of years ago, my wife and I took a trip to Palm Springs, We were taking a bus tour around, and this is in the middle of a desert, a beautiful community, lush green grass everywhere, irrigating all during the daytime. And I asked the tour guide, I said, well, you're in the middle of a desert, you've got all this lush grass, all this irrigation going on. What do you do for water? He says, oh, we've got enough water for at least 10 years.
at least 10 years. That was 12 years ago.
Anyway. City Council, additional questions, comments, or a motion on agenda item number three? I can't even read my own writing.
I move to approve resolutions number two and three.
Actually,
three and four.
We haven't had the presentation on four, so let's do one
okay.
at a time.
All right, three.
Three.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number four, Resolution approving a work order for Connect Consulting in amount not to exceed $51,000 for hydrogeological services for the Southern Wellfield Wetland Monitoring Program. Mr. Adams?
Okay, actually, the next two items are related. We, as part of our consumptive use permit compliance, we have to do wetland monitoring. Talked a little bit about that in the last presentation, but basically we have to go out and we have to drill monitoring wells and we have to gather data to make sure our withdrawals don't have negative impacts on the wetlands. So these next two items are related to our South Wellfield monitoring plan as required by the Water Management District. So this particular item is for the well driller, Connect Consulting, to drill the required monitoring wells. The map here shows where those are and the wetlands that we are monitoring as part of the consumptive use permit.
Council questions? Stupid question. Since you rotate wells and you have wells that are resting, you couldn't use a resting well as a monitoring well?
We do use existing wells where we can, yes. There's a lot of monitoring that goes on that includes production wells, monitoring production wells, monitoring. Most production wells have monitoring wells next to them. These are specific wells needed near the wetlands for the wetland monitoring.
Okay. Council questions on agenda item number four. Mr. DiLorenzo.
Thank you, Mayor. Whose regulatory cost is this? St. John's Water Management District requires this?
Correct. It's part of our consumptive use permit issued by the Water Management District. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Open a meeting for the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number four?
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. I'm just curious, has any of these wells collapsed or just plain stopped?
We'll get you an answer. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion. Oh, we do have another speaker. I'm sorry.
Sorry, little question. I'm wondering if the city has considered expanding the collection of stormwater in any way.
Anyone else? Now we'll close the meeting to the public. Richard, two questions. Have wells ever ceased production, and what about stormwater collection?
Oh, yes, we've had plenty of wells cease production, and that's why we come in with redrills. Collapsing, internally some collapsing of the formation that's, you know, deep underground that may have collapsed inside the well hole, but, not collapsing to the point where you're standing on ground and, you know, you have a sinkhole or something. We haven't experienced anything like that. But wells do fail. Most of the older wells all have steel casings. Those steel casings eventually rust out sometimes, and we have to go in and redrill. We have the shallow aquifer is gravel pack wells. They have external casings and internal casings and well screens that fail over time. So, yes, we have lots of well failures, and that's part of our ongoing R&R budget that we have to do just like any other piece of equipment.
And the second question, stormwater capture and use.
Actually, we did. Before we got into Coquina Coast, the first thing we did was the Flagler County Water Supply Plan was developed by all utilities within Flagler County with the help of the Water Management District. And we looked at all kinds of alternative sources before we settled on investigating seawater, and canal water was one of those things. We did something called a canalysis.
That back pumping?
But yes. Correct. But and at that point, we dismissed the canal water as a viable source, really because of limited quantity. But it's not something we have totally dismissed, and it's something that we continue to look at. And we will look at back pumping canal water to rehydrate our well field areas or possibly direct withdrawals from canals in the future. But that's always something to consider, but so far it hasn't been the most viable source.
But there is irrigation from the freshwater
correct.
Canals.
Correct. We irrigate a lot.
That is stormwater utilization for irrigation purposes.
Palm Harbor Golf Course, for example, irrigates from stormwater. A lot of our medians are irrigated from stormwater. Some of the sports complexes irrigated from stormwater.
I think Pine Lakes is also, is it?
Pine Lakes and the Cypress Knolls are also irrigated from stormwater. Correct.
So that's... Given the system we've got, if you can irrigate with stormwater, then you don't have to irrigate with potable water.
Correct.
So, right. Back to council. Additional questions on agenda item number four? If not, is there a motion?
Move approval of agenda item number four, resolution approving a work order for Connect Consulting Incorporated in an amount not to exceed $51,000 for hydrogeological services for the Southern Wellfield Wetland Monitoring Program.
There a second?
I second stipulating that the number is 51,100.
Ah, thank you.
We were trying to shave a little bit there, Bill.
Nice try.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. Agenda item number five. I'm going to presume this is the same kind of thing with a different number for a different location.
Actually, this is the wetland monitoring program that's being put together by our environmental engineer. So basically, this is setting up the entire program. Our environmental consultant is the one that has coordinated with the Water Management District to determine where the locations of all the monitoring points are going to be, where the wells need to be, and this particular contract is to set up the entire program to put us on a monitoring plan. So then once this work is complete, the stations are all set up, the report is prepared, then we start monitoring.
Council questions?
I have a question, Your Honor. Richard, what's the difference, if any, between the services offered by Connect Consulting and CPH Engineers?
CPH Engineers is the environmental engineer that sets up the whole program. Connect Consulting is the drilling of the wells, the hydrogeological.
So they're not in competition?
Service. No. They work together.
Okay. Thank you.
Other council questions? Open the meeting to the public. Anyone from the public wish to be heard on agenda item number five? Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion of the meeting. Go back to council. Additional questions, comments, or a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the consent agenda. There's only one item on the consent agenda, but before council deals with it, if anyone from the public would like to speak on agenda item number six, we'll provide that opportunity. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll go back to council. Consent agenda item number six, a resolution approving piggybacking the Lee County contract with Staples Contract and Commercial, Inc. for purchase of office supplies.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries without objection. This brings us to the public participation portion of the meeting. This is the opportunity for members of the public to speak on any item not on today's agenda. Please come up to the podium, give us your name, limit your contribution to 3 minutes.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. Councilman, I think we have a problem that I see in what it is signs. You're driving around and all of a sudden there's a sign there, but the foliage is covering it up, so you can't see it until you're right on top of it. And I thought it was only in one area, but I drive around a lot, and I notice more and more and more. And if you have a crew or supervisors ride around and note, this is happening, that over here, over there. You know, it's too numerous, it's too numerous a spot. You know, I just happen to notice you come up and you're driving and all of a sudden there's a sign and you say, holy gee, I wish I would have seen that sign
Are you talking about traffic signs, Lewis?
Various signs telling you either turn or dare or people walking or whatever. The problem is that the greenery is growing faster than we can clip it back. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Steve Carr. I want to appreciate the letter that you sent out about the cut through traffic, but it doesn't seem like it's really made a big impact on Florida Park Drive. Traffic there is still pretty heavy. Speeding sometimes gets pretty heavy, too. Try to give you a little different perspective and look at how the Florida Park Drive residents look at this problem over there. The World Health Organization and EPA has come out and said that heavy traffic is going to cause all kind of health problems, okay? So we look at it that way. Suppose you had a child that you took to the doctor. The doctor says, oh, this child's sick. We need to run some tests. Ran some tests. The doctor comes back and says, oh, your child has an aggressive form of cancer. And he says, but in about 6 months when I return from my Bahama vacations, we'll take a look at it. Now, how would that child's parents feel, you know? Well, we got parents over on Florida Park Drive that have children. They see the tests that are already back from the World Health Organization, and they see the tests that are already back from the EPA that says this is if it's traffic within 40 to 60 feet of your homes, it's going to harm your health. Well, the doctors are coming back now and says, well, after Island Walk, after Holland Park, after Old Kings Road interchange, after Palm Harbor Extension, we might do another study. We'll have to bring it up and decide that. In the meantime, the people over there are still being harmed. So we're really frustrated because we really need some help. The traffic is ferocious over there. 5,000 to 8,000 cars per day on Florida Park Drive within 40 to 60 feet of homes is just too much. So we really want the city to really take a different look at that. Think about the thing of a child being sick and the doctor saying, well, when I return, I might do something about it. So we need the problem resolved today. Not tomorrow, because people are being hurt today. If the city doesn't really plan to do anything on it, then the city needs to put on every household sold a disclaimer for anyone that has any kind of health issue not to buy a house in Palm Coast, for the city has neither obligation or desire to protect their health. Well, this will help your water problem, because you won't find anybody that's never been to a doctor to move to Palm Coast. So you won't have any growth. Okay, so that's just my way of looking at it. Ignoring the issues does not resolve the city of the harm that the traffic is causing residents. Make no mistake about it. The city to do nothing means the city has purposely decided to harm the residents.
15 seconds, please.
To harm the residents of Florida Park Drive, especially the elderly and the children. Why is Florida Park Drive more important as a thoroughfare exchanging traffic between two parkways than the health and the lives of the residents who live there?
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
I'll be brief. My name is Ralph Lightfoot, Palm Coast, of course. I just want to say I think the work being done on Palm Coast Parkway, I think, is great. I think eventually it's going to be really, really nice. I just don't want Mr. Landon to forget to, once we get all the new lights up, don't forget to refurbish the old ones, like Florida Park Drive, you know, repaint it or do something to it, because the other ones look great. So we need to make sure that the old ones are brought up to date. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is John Brady, and I live in Palm Coast. And I wanted to reiterate what the gentleman said about Florida Park Drive. There is absolutely absolutely, positively no need to do a study. Those of you who are married know that if your spouse says there's a problem and you say there's no problem, you have a problem. So this is the same situation. There is a problem. What is the solution? I am very disappointed at economic development, city council members, and the mayor that there has not been more development at Matanzas and Route 1. Why are people going down that road? To shop. There's no place over there to go and buy the essentials of life, food. The city, the mayor, the council should be giving incentives to Publix or anybody else who will open a food market or some sort of place where people can go and not have to travel down that road. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Jack Cowell, Palm Coast. At the workshop, you took almost 2 hours to discuss the size of a fence and a garbage pail. Why is it on the agenda? You know, you've spent so much time discussing the ins and outs of our rules and regulations, but I thought that what you do at the workshop is what you intend to bring out on a regular meeting. So why isn't this humongous thing that you killed, you know, with so much talk? That why is it on the agenda?
Jack,
tonight?
Remind me what the issue was.
It was code enforcement.
The code enforcement.
Okay.
Well, that's the issue was the fence and the garbage pail.
Okay.
And from that, everybody had their own little idiosyncrasies, and they want to know why. And it took up almost 2 hours to accomplish nothing. So, but my question is, why isn't it on the agenda today so that the whole public can hear what you got to say about it?
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning again. George Mayo, Palm Coast. 2 weeks ago in Las Vegas, they had a black hat convention. Drew about several thousand people to it. Nobody attending brought in their own cell phone, iPads, or laptops because their black hats are hackers, basically. The director of Homeland Security pleaded with some of these people to work with government. And what came out of that was several cities, towns, counties around the country, they named several, that were hacked. Their computer systems were taken over for a relatively small amount of money, $5,000, $10,000. And the cities found out that it was cheaper to pay them and more expeditious to just pay them and get their systems back rather than to all of a sudden try and fight it. Also, they found there's a new set of hackers, usually young ones, that take over water treatment plants, as we talked about, wastewater treatment plants, power grids, just because they can for ha-has. I'd like to know if this, all these cities and towns thought they were well protected against something like this. And I'd just like to know, I believe your IT man is here today, is the city well aware of this and protected, and also the water treatment plants, which nobody ever considered before because, okay, it's just a water treatment plant. Are these protected from some kind of these hacks? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll get an answer. Next speaker. Seeing no one approach the podium, we'll close the public portion meeting. Get back to council. But first, the issue of foliage overgrown signs. I agree. I see that a lot. Public Works or Asplund, the private contractor, we need to trim back the foliage where it's obstructing view of the signs.
Would agree. And anytime anybody can help with, and when they see it, let us know. That's always encouraged.
But city staff, we drive around quite a bit.
Right.
Everybody will make a note of it.
Right. Exactly.
Can I ask a question on that?
Sure.
Just to follow up onto that. We have a lot of trees growing into the roads also, not just covering the signs, but actually going into the road. Is the plan,
that eventually they will grow above that point? Because right now, we when they grow over the road, we kind of cut them, and they look funny. You know, they have this big hawk right down the side. Is the plan eventually that will grow above that point, or you know, should you follow up my?
I'm not so sure one size fits all. You know, in the median, the
yeah,
idea.
In the median, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, yes, I'm sorry.
In the median, eventually, yes. The idea is that they will grow up high enough, or some of them don't get out to
to
the road.
Okay.
But the ones that will go over, yes, they will eventually be tall enough that we won't have
we'll
to,
have
do,
to
that.
Do that.
The other thing we do, I mean, we're doing it all the time, is trimming the side of the roads in residential areas, major thoroughfares. That's a whole different process. That's more of just a vertical trim to try to do exactly what the gentleman was talking about, is keep the vegetation back away from the right-of-way. It also allows, makes it easier for us to mow the right-of-way.
To that point, mentioning Florida Park Drive, if you drive along Florida Park Drive and see the tree trimming that FPNL has contracted with Aspelin to do, you have some very unusually shaped trees that go up and around the power lines. This is the quandary that you have when you have a tree favorable city, and yet you have utilities and roads and other things there. There's going to be an interconnection between the two. They're going to meet. Florida Park Drive. We've discussed that issue any number of times. I hesitate to point out something Mr. DiLorenzo and I saw. Please don't take this the wrong way, Mr. Carr. But last week, the county held two transportation meetings, one here in Palm Coast, where they talked about the potential of expanding the somewhat limited transportation on demand system that they currently have to some sort of a fixed bus route. And they had six poster boards up showing six alternative routes. One included Florida Park Drive. I pointed out that probably was not the most desirable option, and it wasn't. But we continue to look at that as some source of potential solution.
Mr. Mayor, may I comment?
Please.
I thought, Mr. Carr, I thought your analogy was quite eloquent, actually, and made a pretty good point. But along Florida Park Drive, the backyards are not along the roadway. They're further away from the road. I live in the P section and travel Belterre along with several other thousand people every day that has backyards along Belterre, certainly closer to the road with no buffer of the house at all. We have lots of roads like that, Royal Palms, White View, Rimfire, all equally close as Florida Park Drive and equally as busy. There's, if you live on or back up to a busy road, there's extra noise, and it's just the fact of it. Earlier this year, Councilman Nobile commented on some communications he had with residents that back up to Royal Palms Parkway, which is 55 miles an hour and an elevated road compared to the backyards. You can see straight into the houses from that road. Absolutely no buffer. This isn't an issue just for Florida Park Drive. This happens all over this city and in every other city. And closing Florida Park Drive is just not an option, because it may be some of the residents along Florida Park Drive may be in favor of that, but certainly the feeder roads that go into the down towards the canals and into the F section, that's not going to work for them. There is only one way of access for some of those streets, and that access is Florida Park Drive. And I know your concern is primarily on the through traffic, but just closing the road to stop the through traffic has other implications.
Thank you. Third speaker talked about, I'm going to paraphrase, light pole rehabilitation. If you look at the existing mast arm at the intersection of Florida Park Drive and Palm Coast Parkway eastbound, the black finish, whether it be paint or whatever, power coating, is eroding away. It's covered with lichen or mildew or mold, and it really looks kind of shabby. I don't know how one can rehabilitate those, but it's certainly something that does need to be looked at. Shopping center alternatives, alternative venues, and the possibility of incentives to get someone to develop a shopping center where there isn't one now. Incentives are always an option for any government, but they have to be used very judiciously, because what you do is pit one private sector developer against another. You may give unfair advantage. And the question of whether or not an incentive to a developer to build, let's say, a Publix at the intersection of US 1 and Matanzas might be a benefit, but whether it would be a benefit to the entire city and whether it would warrant the expenditure of taxpayer dollars, that's a question that remains open. One of the interesting questions the City Council gets all the time, why do we have this rather than that? Why do we have a Publix rather than a Trader Joe's? Why do we have a McDonald's rather than a Burger King? And you can expand on, there are all kinds of combinations and permutations. The reality is that if you own a piece of commercial property, you can develop it, but the decision of when to develop it and what to put there is your decision to make. As long as what you propose meets the zoning and building codes, we can't say you can't build another McDonald's or you have to build a Burger King instead. That would be excessive reaching of government into the private sector's business. We try very hard as a city government, as our economic development, to encourage people to develop here. But ultimately, the decision rests with the private sector.
If I could inject,
please.
We also, the city has engaged in a plan now for attracting new retail. And when that starts kicking in and the data shows us that that area will support the retail, then we can present that to those retailers, see if we can get them to move up in that area.
May I comment?
Please.
Thank you, Mayor. That contract that we just signed with Buxton, I think, will be very successful, especially with some of our existing shopping centers and infill areas. But the area that Ms. Brady was speaking of at Matanzas and US 1, the number one factor in moving projects forward there is going to be houses. It's very simple. That's how these retailers work. If there are a certain number of rooftops, a certain number of customers within a certain size radius, whatever that model works for them, then they're going to build, because they know once they reach that level, they'll have a profitable store and it'll make all the sense to build something.
The next question had to do with why was there something discussed at a workshop that was not discussed at a public meeting? All the meetings are public. The public is certainly welcome to attend the workshops and certainly welcome to listen to the workshops as they're broadcast. The workshop is an opportunity for City Council to discuss issues and see if there's consensus. The business meeting is to enact ordinances, pass resolutions, to make decisions. The discussion, the rather lengthy discussion about code enforcement, was to share opinions, share concerns, share perspectives on the issues, and to determine whether or not there was something that needed to be addressed at a business meeting. The consensus was that there was nothing at that moment that we needed to do that would require formal action on the part of City Council. The last question, Mr. Viscardi here?
He's moving closer.
Mr. Mayor, if I could add on to that last topic.
Sure.
While we're waiting for Mr. Viscardi, you know, You also, I want to just make sure the public is aware, you also announced, consistent with Florida statutes, that if there's anything that a member of the public would wish to add on to the discussion from a workshop, that they are certainly able to do so at a meeting like today. And you make that announcement, consistent with the Florida law, Chapter 286, at all the workshops. So there, the City of Palm Coast is in compliance with the requirements under Chapter 286 as far as providing a notice as well as an opportunity for the public to participate in any discussion that is conducted during a workshop.
To the issue of hacking, just this morning on the news, it seems that Easy Pass is now being hacked and people are being asked to pay bills that they don't owe. What's the city's defenses against hacking? What vulnerabilities do we have? And specifically the issue of our utilities, since they are computerized to some extent.
Frankly, I'm shocked. Steve Iscardi, IT director. There's not a day that goes by that we don't hear, you know, something else has been hacked or, you know, some new programs come out that's, you know, invading everything else. Exactly. We do employ a number of security measures. You know, what we try to do is it's kind of security in layers. You know, so we have filters, we have firewalls, and then our backup system is also kind of one of our measures that we take. We actually just implemented a new system that allows us to back up multiple times during the day. So, again, that is kind of in case we do have an issue, we have a greater chance to recover from it. It's a moving target. I mean, it's something that, again, we have to just keep up with, you know, the latest, you know, trends and these sorts of things. And again, we try to employ some industry standard systems to take, you know, to mitigate those risks. As far as the water plants, again, they're under our same system of protections. We have various segmentations of the network so that even if you get into one area, you might not be able to get into all of them, that sort of thing. But, again, they're kind of protected under our same umbrella as far as backups and all the firewalls and these sorts of things. Again, it's just something that it never, you know, as soon as you put one thing in place, then something new comes out. Another thing we actually do participate in is, I think it's about every other year, we'll engage a company to do some white hat testing, where they'll come in and try to do a penetration test on our network, try to identify any security issues that we have. I think the auditors are going to be doing something like that in the coming year. So again, we try to take advantage of, you know, any resource that we can to fight this.
You could probably get a senior from the high school to do the same testing for you.
please don't go there.
Also, keep in mind, this is for us personally, and you know, and how things. Most hacking doesn't occur by someone guessing and computerizing their way in. They're manipulating personnel. You know, they're making a phone call and they're saying, can I, you know, I lost my account number. Can I have my account? You know, so it's more, you know, more the information we give them that then allows them to come in. It's just not a magic, you know what I mean? So you got to, it's the individual that has to really be aware. If you don't know them, you know.
And that is a big part of it. I mean, you really have to, and we try to do that whenever the opportunity kind of arises, is it's education.
Yeah.
You know, you don't open emails that you're not sure of, you know, as far as the attachments go. But, again, it's just something that's an ongoing battle.
Yep.
To that point, the Easy Pass hacking, all they've got is raw data. They've got names. So they send an email out to Steve Viscardi and say, you owe $43 on your E-Pass account. Send a check or send a money order or... Well, Steve Viscardi ought to know whether he's been traveling on the Florida Turnpike or the Florida Greenway or not. But many people, well, if they say I owe it, I must owe it, and they send the money on. They're making their money on volume. If I send out 100,000 of these bogus things and 1,000 people respond, I'm in the green. I'm in the clover. So just
yep.
be be cautious, and I'm sure we are too. I'm sure that if the IRS can get hacked and so on and so forth, probably nobody is immune. But I think the backups, the repetitive backups, the cumulative backups, at least you can then restore. That's the important thing.
Exactly.
Anyway. This brings us to a discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Mr. McGuire, why don't we start with you, sir?
Nothing.
Mr. Nobile?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. DiLorenzo?
No, sir.
Ms. Shipley?
No, sir.
Discussion by City Attorney of matters not on the agenda.
One item, Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to Florida law, again, Chapter 286, at a public meeting, I have the opportunity to request advice that would be done in the shade, in this executive session, but only as to pending litigation. And the city currently is involved in a lawsuit brought by Dennis and Janet McDonald for a personal injury matter. And at this point in time, you're as your attorney representing the lawyers in this matter, I do need advice concerning the litigation. I need to have that discussion in the context of an executive session. The subject matter of the meeting, of course, consistent with the Florida statutes, is confined to the settlement negotiations or strategy sessions related to the litigation expenditures in this matter. So it is my request that you will allow me to have this discussion with you, which would be conducted consistent with Florida statutes during the next workshop. And I'm asking, making that request at this public meeting.
Council consensus to have an executive session?
Yes.
Agreed.
Thank you very much. It will be scheduled accordingly.
Okay. Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
First put a plug in for our annual intercoastal waterway cleanup. That's Saturday, September 5th. It starts 8 a.m. at this facility right here at Palm Coast Community Center. It's a lot more than just a waterway cleanup nowadays. We've got a lot of volunteers. A lot of fun happens that day. Also, just a reminder that school starts Monday, which means we've got a lot of young people to and from school, and the school zone speed limits are going to be in effect, and always, actually, for those that are impacted by school, it's always great to have them go back to school, in my opinion. So, and then, you know, our construction projects. The one update I would give you that's kind of tied into school is we have started the Palm Harbor extension, the intersection at Palm Harbor, Old Kings Road, the new intersection of Palm Harbor, Old Kings Road, and Matanzas Woods Parkway. Is a lot of delays going on at that point. In a couple of days this week, we're actually going to shut it down so that we can get that, the contractor can get it, that intersection finished before school starts. The Matanzas Woods Parkway overpass is open again, so that's a good thing. They promised that it would be open before school, and they've met that commitment. And then Palm Coast Parkway, you're actually seeing some trees being planted, a lot of finish work. It's moving right along, and what you see now, you're going to it's going to have an impact. It's going to make a big difference. All the underground work is done. All that work that they have to do that you don't see much of is behind us, but now it's going to be very visible, and it is still scheduled to be completed in the November-December time frame. City Hall is moving along very nicely, and contractors very confident that they will actually be finished with the construction part of it by the end of September, which will allow us to start moving furniture and move in the first part of October as per our plan. And then those of you that drive up and down Old Kings Road to the south, you'll see the forced main is moving along. And they've had some one-lane detours going on there.
I've experienced that.
Yep. I actually got here a little early today thinking that might happen to me this morning, but it didn't happen today. So. You know, a lot of positive things happening out there. An island walk is coming right along. It's that's one's very exciting, and so just kind of stay tuned. That's the update I have for you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Mayor.
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation.